Support your favorite charity while potentially receiving income for life. CEF Advisors Pooled Income Fund allows donors to contribute appreciated securities, may provide a charitable deduction and lifetime income. Learn more at cefdata.com/PIF. Income and tax benefits are not guaranteed. Consult a financial professional.
It's been a rough year for business development companies. Is it going from bad to worse? We'll discuss it with John Cole Scott, president of CEF Advisors, now on The Navigator. This is The Navigator, which is about all-weather active investing and plotting a course to financial success using closed-end funds. The Navigator is brought to you by the Active Investment Company Alliance, which is a unique industry organization representing the entire closed-end fund industry, from fund sponsors and creators, managers, down to users and investors. In the search for excellence beyond indexing, the Navigator is pointing you in the right directions. And today, we're looking in the direction of business development companies and the issues that have been plaguing them this year, whether they're getting worse or whether they might be setting up an attractive buying opportunity. We're having that discussion with John Cole Scott, who's president of CEF Advisors. And if you want to learn more about the firm or dig into its data on closed-end funds and business development companies for yourself, go to cefdata.com. But I will also point out that John has published some of the data that we're going to talk about on his LinkedIn profile. So you can find him on LinkedIn, and you'll be able to get a lot more on closed-end funds there. John's also chairman of the Active Investment Company Alliance, which you can learn about at AICalliance.org. And there's also a LinkedIn page for ACA where they also publish data, not always the same data. So follow in both places if you want more on closed-end funds. John Cole Scott, welcome back to The Navigator.
It's always great to be here, Chuck.
John, it's been two straight quarters of dividend cuts, not for every BDC, of course, but for enough of the industry that this is a clear trend. But is the underlying trend simply that there are fewer good managers of business development companies, or is it that there are more bad managers now?
Well, I mean, the major trends we've talked about before and should be in the cognizance of our listeners is interest rates are down, and there's been more concern about the credit quality inside these BDCs. So we first did this data table after the first quarter earnings season. We've finally been able to update the data for the listed universe for the second quarter. And we literally took the top, basically 18, and the bottom 18 BDCs over about 250 market cap and sorted them on one thing, 1 year return on equity. And in that data set, the average 1 year currently is about 10 and mid change for the average better. And in last quarter, it was 11 and low change. And the lower end stayed very stable, just above zero for the first quarter and just slightly ticking higher for the second quarter. No material change. People are probably more familiar with net asset value, total return when thinking about a fund. So we want to throw that data in there too. The 1 year in the first quarter was 12 and low change. Now it's 11 and mid change. So a slight erosion on a 1 year basis for the better cohort. But the bottom cohort, 0.8%, and then 0.6% to another slight nudge down. What's interesting, you and I can't buy the net asset value of a listed BDC. So what are the market prices doing total return? Basically went from down 2% 1 year to down 3%. And for the worst cohort, from down 16.5% to down 12%. So there's been some recovery in some of the weaker names, but they've still been underperforming. The average discount for these funds went from 3.2 in the first quarter to just flat in the second quarter, a nice delta of plus 2 and change. The weakest were negative 32. Now they're negative 27. A bigger bounce, but a much bigger negative.
Yeah. And of course, we can't necessarily say that that's a trend that says, oh, the managers there are doing a lot better.
No, sometimes dead cats bounce higher. But look at the yield. We went from a 10 and high change to 10 and low change. And for the weaker ones, 14 and high change to 13 and high change. So again, similar feeling in that. And the dividend growth, this actually, Chuck, is a really important data point. It went from negative 5.8 1 year to a quarter later, negative 6.7. That's slightly worse, but not ugly. The other ones went from negative 13.5 to negative 16. A little bit uglier, but pullback. Remember, we talked about the AI risk exposure a couple times this year on the Navigator. Basically, the AI exposure went from 17.6 to 18 for the better cohort, and it went from 23.8 to 26.8 for the weaker cohort, showing some more AI risks popping up in the portfolios that are showing more problems. But the weighted risk score, and this is the fascinating thing to me and really important, 5 and low change, first quarter, second quarter, top cohort, bottom cohort, we're really not seeing worse fundamental exposure to AI alone in any of the BDCs we're looking at. But we are seeing non-accruals go from 1.23 for the better cohort to 1.4 and 1.98 for the cohort to 1.86. So again, not every data point goes the right direction. You'd like the worst one to be a little bit worse than 90 days ago, but data is data. I can't change it. And I think the important thing we think about, all the headlines I read on LinkedIn about PIC and how it's going to destroy my portfolio, 5.8 to 5.7 for the better cohort and 8.6 to 8.3. So on average, PIC is down second quarter than first quarter. And while it's not down from 2 years ago, it's not seems to be destroying the portfolio. And I said this last quarter, double checked it. Is the cohort this quarter just the better cohort this quarter? And last year they were the worst. The average ROE for 5 years, 11 and change in both buckets, first quarter, second quarter for the good ones. And from 3.8 first quarter up to 5.4, still a huge disparity in those BDCs and how they performed. And what that really means to our listeners is we're still not seeing software blowing up BDCs. However, we still need more time for data to go for another quarter and another quarter to really prove that thesis, because I can't guarantee it today.
That's what people were expecting, and that was a big part of why BDCs were getting hammered. More on why they were getting hammered in a second, because here we are talking about two quarters of data. You just said you're going to need more, so I know you don't think two quarters of data and what we've seen this year presents the full picture. But I also know, because we've talked about it in the past, that you have been watching the net flows from activists and followers. It's proprietary data that people can find on your cefdata.com website. But the story there about what's been going with activist investors and followers is more like an 18-month story than just the first 6 months, right? Explain to us what you're seeing there.
The rationale was I wanted to look at the data before people cared about that data. Like, I wanted to normalize the data to what was happening last year before people were freaking out about software in the summer of 25. So we looked at the 13 filings for the universe. First quarter of 25, there was a pullback of about $850 million of those filings. And then a small one the next quarter, second quarter 25, of $150 million. So about $1 billion pulled back as people were reacting to the first quarter of 25, which, by the way, wasn't AI. So we then get to the third quarter and the market turned the other direction, $1.4 billion put into listed BDCs. And then a nice year end, $140 million in Q4 25. And then Q1 of 26, with all of, because discounts were going crazy, all of these headlines saying BDCs are going to go broke, maybe not that headline, but ones like it, almost another $1 billion in the first quarter and almost $250 million in the second quarter, which is 13 filings that were logged in the Edgar system by August 15th. So this is the freshest data we can see. That is showing me that people that have filed 13s are buying BDCs. Yes, they're tasty discounted, but it's not like they're avoiding them because they think they're all on fire.
The other problem for BDCs, beyond some of the software issues that everybody thought this is going to become a problem for them, the other issue was the gating issue, where in the middle of everything, market heats up and investors find they can't get all of their money out. And you only need that to happen one time with one BDC that makes headlines for investors everywhere to get scared. So how big has the gating problem actually been?
So really, we saw in the first half of 26, just over $7 billion in fundraising. That's adding to BDCs, but that's down 70% from the previous year. And the first half of 26, almost $13 billion redeemed. Again, that includes almost $6 billion in quarter two alone. And that is roughly double the inflow of 13 filers in the listed universe. However, there's more than double the assets in the non-traded. And it's important because if you think about retail behavior, people that maybe didn't understand or digest that this was a possible outcome, even in a good market potentially, but it's been a people wanting out broadly amongst these BDCs. But at the same time, people going, I'm not saying no to private credit or these variable rate loans. It's just the structure is a thing pulling different directions, institutional versus retail. And I think that's been a really big story that, like the other data, we're going to need another quarter to talk about this in about 90 days to see where the trends continue.
You know, the gating issue always strikes me as kind of the definition of a recession versus a depression. Gating is a problem with the industry, but it's only my problem if it happens in my fund with my money.
Yeah, and just for perspective, in case people don't understand those big, big numbers, that's about 12% of net asset value for non-traded BDCs, and about 38% of the money asked for was given back. Not 100, but not 5.
Beyond the gating, the thing that would scare investors is high interest rates that could result in more defaults in the underlying credits. And of course, where people were thinking that might happen would be software. But how big has the non-accrual problem been for BDCs? Like, have we seen bad problems, or we just anticipated bad problems?
For this, I did have to go deeper because I wanted to remember the world before COVID. So I looked at our EcoWay BDC index and the average non-accruals basically after the fourth quarter 2019 earnings season. It was 1.43. We then fast forward 6 months later when we're showing our marks of the June 30th of that year, 2.5%. So quite a big move, but still not crazy scary. And the cool thing is, 1 year later, it dropped below the 19 levels to 1.05. We then get a little bit further into it, and between fourth quarter of 21 and fourth quarter of 25, that four-year range, it bounced between 1.19 and 1.83. So movement up and down throughout that period, but nothing aggressive. We then said, okay, after first quarter, remember what this index was showing us, 1.77, higher than 19, but nowhere near the COVID. And then this time, 1.64. The non-accrual set index are lower today than 90 days ago, barely over where they were in fourth quarter of 19. I think that's a really powerful way to say, yes, when you lend money as a credit manager, you're going to lose some of that money every quarter, every year, every decade. But we're not seeing exacerbated losses in these marks of these loans in a material way.
It's the problem that the market is anticipating. It's driving the price down. It's widening the discount, but it's not necessarily impairing the BDCs.
It is. And the other way I think about that was more of like an annual NAV total return, where 2020 was actually basically flat, which means the NAVs were actually down roughly 10-ish percent because the yield is added back in there. 21, it was up over 20%, which I'd say is a full healing of the previous year. We then saw 7.5% in 22, 10.3% in 23, just under 10 in 24, just under 2/3 in 25. You're seeing a little bit of waning in the performance, but not terrible numbers. And half year 26, it's 4.24, which would model if the next two quarters were the same as the last two quarters, which they most certainly won't be, but I must annualize the data, that's going to be between 6 and 7%. So not a robust year, but nothing like the ugly pain of COVID. And of course, it could tick lower than 6-7, but I do imagine once this is a rearview mirror item, net asset values of these BDCs, well, should recover similar to the bounce back from COVID.
You talk about the bottom cohort, which is a statistical way of saying the dregs of the database. Or to put it in investor parlance, this is where the funds or the BDCs suck relative to their peers. But there is one situation going on right now where it's BlackRock, TCP Capital. This is how the stories play out when a BDC winds up in the dregs. So explain what's going on and how you think it will be resolved, and whether investors will wind up going, yeah, this is every bit as bad as bottom cohort makes me feel it's going to be.
This is the BDC that BlackRock took over, Tennenbaum Capital, if our listeners are longtime owners of these funds, and have worked on it for a while. And it just seems like a mix of missteps and miscalculations and just not operating the business well. And they tried to, I guess, relieve the pressure with a large asset sale out of the net asset value. I want to say 95 cents on the dollar, which is not ugly, but not great if you thought they were worth a dollar 90 days ago. And now it feels like with the reaction to it, and it's a good chance that the rest of the portfolio will get carved up. And the reason why BDCs like Ares Capital and Prospect are being floated in an idea is because those BDCs actually did that to other BDCs after the 08-09 recession. If you're familiar with BDCs way back then, Patriot Capital became Prospect Capital and Allied Capital became embedded into Ares. And so they got them at very steep discounts because that was an even uglier time period than COVID for BDCs. And so that's the thinking. It's a chance for the board to potentially basically give up. I mean, they could just sell the management fee to someone else and say, you try, give us a bunch of money and we'll sell it to you. This is more potentially unwinding the entire fund at hopefully a reasonable price to just let the capital and the underlying loans get recessed. Because a lot of people said you basically got rid of the loans you could get rid of first. And that makes me suspect the ones that are sitting on the balance sheet are not the easy ones and not the liquid ones. And they can't guarantee that because they didn't write these loans. But that's a suspicion that feels to be coming out. But again, we probably won't know for a quarter or so because there's got to be some proxy votes and other mechanisms under the 40 Act.
Does not make you confident that even 95 cents on the dollar is going to be what the turnout, but at least we have a perspective on what might happen if you're in that bottom cohort. And that's the thing from all of this that I take away that you really want to avoid. John, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you again soon.
Always a pleasure.
The Navigator is a joint production of the Active Investment Company Alliance and Money Life with Chuck Jaffe. And yeah, that's me. And you can learn more about my show by going to MoneyLifeShow.com or by looking for it where you find your favorite podcasts. Now, if you want to look for more information on BDCs, closed-end funds, and interval funds, go to AICAlliance.org. It's the website for the Active Investment Company Alliance. Thanks to my guest, John Cole Scott. He's president of CEF Advisors in Richmond, Virginia. He's the chairman of the Active Investment Company Alliance. Learn about his firm, dig into its research and data for yourself at CEFdata.com. Don't forget, you can get more information from John on some of the stuff he's publishing by following him on LinkedIn. The Navigator podcast is available for you every Friday. Make sure you don't miss any of our episodes by following along or subscribing on your favorite podcast app. We'll be back next week with more closed-end fun talk. Until then, happy investing, everybody.